Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. A weekly podcast where the discussion is about the most recent horror and genre films. Intelligent talk on a genre that deserves intelligence. A conversation between co-hosts discussing not only the film, but also the connotation that the directors and screenwriters are trying to articulate. If you want more than a review, listen to Dark Discussions.
And speaking of perception, there's just one more scene I want to talk about, which is after Caleb discovers that Kyoto's a robot, Kyoto kind of peels off her skin, showing him what's underneath.
Now, wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, but tell me you weren't already thinking this 15 minutes earlier in the film. Exactly what he's thinking at that moment.
Which is he's a robot, too.
Oh, I considered the possibility.
Right, and that's what I like, is the fact that the writers were smart enough to know that this is what the audience would be thinking.
We've all seen Blade Runner.
Right. Exactly.
www.darkdiscussions.com, wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm sad. We got to do a recording of a podcast talking about a horror movie instead of watching the State of the Union address.
That was funny. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you, sir?
Good.
That's good. Since Mike alluded to it, today is March 7th, 2024, that we're recording this episode. For some of our listeners who are curious, because sometimes we don't release these episodes immediately, though this one will be probably released within the next 2 to 3 weeks anyway, because some of our listeners like Pam. I think I said that twice. So there you go. Now, what else? Who are we? Well, we are the Dark Discussions podcast, as discussed earlier. We do talk about films, so horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, foreign language films, cult films, drive-in fare, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com. Just type in DDP in the subject line and whatever your subject is, and then we will read your email on the podcast. By typing DDP in the subject, we'll know that it is from a listener rather than one of the many marketing folk that send us screeners and marketing notices and release notices and all that stuff. So what else do we got? We do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And we do have a website, www.darkdiscussions.com, where you can find this podcast among all other podcasts that you may want to listen to that your co-hosts that are on this podcast do appear on. And Eric, what else can people find on www.darkdiscussions.com?
They can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to financially contribute to your online artists like us. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like web domains and website hosting and movie tickets and computer equipment and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or click on the Patreon badge on any page of darkdiscussions.com. We appreciate any and all contributions.
Indeed, indeed. And we give back to, and you get to choose a movie for us to review. We just did. Yes. We throw them into a spreadsheet, and then we do a random pick every quarter and eventually get to the podcast. We did three of them in January. We did Fallen, the Denzel Washington film from some years ago, I think 1998. Then we also did Mysterious Skin from, I think, 2004 maybe. And then we did The Piper, which is a 2015 film from Korea, which actually was just released as a podcast episode tonight. Actually, not tonight, but this afternoon, Eastern Standard Time. So three podcasts of Patreon picks and they all have just been released within the past month. All right, so I think that's pretty much all the house cleaning. And as mentioned, we do talk about films. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the movie currently available for digital rental called Midnight Peep Show.
Black Rabbit. It's a dark web thing. Sexual fantasy website.
Fantasy can be dangerous. Just know where the line is.
No lines are there to be crossed.
I'm lost.
Bet you are.
Do you know anything about this Black Rabbit?
Give your body over to us, and you get paid.
Addictive, isn't it? We just want to see more.
This company is linked with all sorts of disappearances and deaths.
What's this? Who are these people?
I would like to remind all contestants that escape attempts will result in electrical punishment.
If we can't handle what we see, there's always a price to pay for looking.
That's right. Midnight Peep Show is a brand new horror film that just came out within the past couple weeks of 2024. The film is technically a little older than that because it did the festival circuits before it finally got its release everywhere on VOD because it did like Arrow, that the Blu-ray company, they had a convention a year or so ago, and it actually played there. The film has four directors, I think. Four directors, because it's a horror anthology for folks who are curious. So Andy Edwards, Ariel Anthony Haley's, Ludovica Musemsechi, and Jake West. And the writing credits include the same folk. Film has a number of folks that star in it, and I'm not familiar with most of them. It is an English film, meaning from the UK, though there is one or two American actors, or folks at least that pretend to be Americans because they have American accents, while everybody else is British, and it takes place in, I guess, the Soho district of London. Films, ratings, it's actually, getting, 100% Rotten Tomatoes from critics, though there's only six reviews by critics, and, about 56 or 57% by audiences. On IMDb, it has a 4 out of 10, out of 225 folk. So yeah, that's pretty much all I got about the film. I haven't heard much else about it except from a couple of people on Facebook and stuff that have suddenly noticed it, as it's like I said, it just came out within the past couple of weeks, maybe even the past 7 days. All right, so I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about this film. So Barrett, you were the one that brought this film to the podcast's attention. How did you hear about this film, and what did you think?
I was looking for possible movies for us to watch, and it was one of three that we ultimately decided on this one. I thought I would like it more. I came away with it feeling kind of meh. I think it was trying to be like this really sexualized film, and there's like absolutely no nudity, so it felt kind of weird. So part of that was weird. And then the stories themselves were not as strong as I would like. And it had some kind of supernatural thing going on, as well as a some other internet weird stuff going on. So ultimately, it was okay. I didn't hate it. It was no Skinamarink, but it's not high on my list of movies.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, I actually heard about this film from Jason Lloyd of the Horrorphilia, the former Horrorphilia Network, who now does Jason Unleashed, which is a Facebook group on obviously Facebook, where he reviews films. And he texted me, let me know that this is a film, Phil, that you may be interested in. So I heard about it, and at this point, he had it as his third favorite film of the year for horror films, and he's has a list of about 20 right now. So I then heard about it again from Barrett when he brought it up, and we chose this one out of the three. So my feelings on the film, I'm kind of where Barrett is. His concerns and complaints are kind of exactly what I felt. Because again, they were trying to be, subversive a bit, but not that nudity is necessary. But if you're going to be a film like this, when it's not there, it kind of takes you out of it, and you know that you're just watching a movie, and it's not really like as effective as it could have been, because you know when you watch a film, you want to be engrossed and be brought right into the film itself. It was also strange, as Barrett said, that there's some supernatural thing going on, which was kind of strange, especially when most of it, besides the wraparound story, wasn't supernatural. So that was kind of weird. And for the first and second stories, they felt a little bit copycats of other films or things we've seen before. And the third story was actually probably the strongest and pretty awesome, but it had some unfortunate special effects that really kind of, again, takes you out of the picture a bit. And then the wraparound story with the supernatural element kind of doesn't fit with the rest of the story. As a film, I feel it's good enough, but nothing necessarily memorable. I'm not really a anthology fan, and I've said this ever since we started the podcast, so they're usually considered my weaker films that I would rate, and like all anthologies with different directors and different writers, not only do they not necessarily fit together, even though the three anthology stories kind of do fit pretty well together in this one, they have their mixed results, just for the fact that as a non-one cohesive story, you're going to have it's like watching a television show, and you have a bad episode or a great episode or an average episode, and you get that here a bit. So good effort for trying. They could have made it done things a little better with practical effects, because again, the things that they did were far enough away they could have just done practical effects without making it look like crappy versus the terrible CGI. And then like Barrett mentioned, with the type of story that it was, and the lack of nudity that would have been realistic in a story like this. Decent enough. It's pretty much stands pretty much where all the other films of this year, 2024 films stand, which is they're all just been, you know, okay. Nothing has popped out yet this year as a great film. Let's go with you, Eric.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that's been said so far. This movie was pretty meh. It did not interest me much at all. It didn't even do me the courtesy of being bad enough to get excited about hating it. It just kind of exists. So, I watched it. That time is gone, and now we're doing this, and this time will be gone, and I'm looking forward to moving on with my life.
All right, sounds good. And Mike, what do you got?
I don't think I got anything half as depressing as Eric's little blurb there. I'll say this is we picked this because we've done some kind of rough stuff, and it seemed like this would be fun. It wasn't. And it wasn't, and I don't necessarily mean it has to be like Tremors fun or Return of the Living Dead fun, but just like a good scary movie fun. And that, for me, can still be something that's just creepy and weird. And it wasn't that either. It was, as Phil said, it's an anthology with really three stories, and then the wraparound, but I never really count the wraparound. And of the three stories, two of them are reheated takes on stuff we saw in the 2000s. And not particularly new or interesting takes on them. I think the idea is fantastic. I think the idea of a anthology series built around weird-ass sexual fetishes that are being facilitated by an unknown person, business, is great. But I just recommend everybody out there, go Google weird sexual fetishes. And within about 30 seconds, it will have been far more disturbed than what you get out of this film. What we got out of this film was really, really fairly bland. And I find that unfortunate. I'm not going to say it's bad. I do not believe that it is bad. I just believe it is just stunningly there. And there is the best I can say.
All right, that sounds good. I would concur with that. All right, so that's our opinion on the film. Now, with that done, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki.
A man stumbles across a darkly magical peep show booth.
All right.
that's it.
Very vague.
It's strange because again, that's the supernatural element of the movie, which oddly doesn't fit with the rest of the film, but we'll get into all that stuff. For folks who are joining us, what we do here on this podcast, Dark Discussions Podcast, this is what we do. What we do is we give our reviews, as we just did. But we also do more here on the Dark Discussions Podcast for all you listeners. What we do is we talk about everything and anything related to the film. So we could talk about horror anthologies. We could talk about English films, meaning from the UK. We could talk about companies and things, which I saw a couple that were films that we've seen that were related to this that could we'll talk about all that in a bit. But what we do is we talk about normal stuff, meaning non-spoilery stuff for the first part of the podcast, and then at a certain point we throw up a spoiler alert, and then at that point we talk about everything and anything. So twists, the ending, things that the film is trying to say, if it is trying to say anything more than just entertainment. As Mike mentioned, sometimes we just want to watch a film that is fun, especially if we've done deeper films in the past. But sometimes we find elements in even those type of films that can be quote-unquote deep. But we won't do any of that until we throw up the spoiler alert. So before we do throw up the spoiler alert, we will talk about general stuff. So let's do that right now. And Mike, I want to start with you because you're Mr. Anthology. You love anthologies. As we mentioned – Yeah, that's fair. But I know you've always been an anthology fan, obviously a good one for good ones. But what is it about anthologies that you usually enjoy, specifically the good ones? Because, again, they're not necessarily a cohesive story, and they're kind of mini shorts within a bigger picture.
Presented for your entertainment is the literature of Stephen King. He writes voluminous tomes of 3,000 pages purporting to be horror. And I think even his staunchest of fans will tell you that most of his stories of late, and it's a long of late, tend to peter out long before the end. It's one of the reasons I kind of gave up reading a lot of his stuff a long time ago. I think short stories tend to work better. You look at Lovecraft, for example. Almost everything he wrote was a short story for horror. They come in, they do their job, they leave. This isn't saying you can't have a good novel or even something epic that works. But I think having horror just lends itself to something that is a lot of unexplained, and unexplained often is unexplored, and you can get the point across pretty easily. There's a lot of movies that started out like as shorts, that like award-winning shorts, and they get expanded into a film, and the film never quite holds up to that award-winning short because it's a short. It just has to creep you out for like a minute and a half, and it's hard to build the story around that. And you can be experimental. You can do a variety of things, right? You don't want to have three stories or four stories at all feel the same. I think of something like Trilogy of Terror, which were three very different stories. Creepshow, five very different stories. Again, plus the wraparounds. And if one isn't to your taste, the odds are you'll find one that is. Now, you take something like the extreme is probably ABCs of Terror and ABCs of Terror. Or it was ABCs of Terror or ABCs of Death?
ABCs of Death.
Where I think they were like given, wasn't like a 5-minute time limit, something like that, or 2-minute time. It was. They all had to be short because you had to stick 26 of these into a 2-hour movie. And you got some weird ass stuff, and a lot of it doesn't work. But there were some things in there that were nice little gems. But you'll also see if you read 100 reviews, very few people have the same take as to which were the gems and which were the stinkers. And I think that's another thing that works for me for anthology. You can usually take something that you walk away from and enjoy. But again, I just think it's just hitting you with a bunch of stories in a format that works well for horror, but I don't think it works as well for other things.
Right. All right. That sounds fair. And, like you mentioned, ABCs of horror. We're getting a lot of feedback in the background. I'm not sure what's going on there. Let's see if,
is that better?
Yeah. Now it's perfect. There we go. I feel you're right, Mike. Like you get a few gems, like in ABC of horror or terror, or whatever the heck they were called, then you know you have other films that have had some pretty solid anthologies. Some of the best anthologies are remembered because they were really good. And that's fair. Now here, you know, we'll get into each of the stories individually. I know, Eric, you had us do season, what was it, 6 or season 5 of Black Mirror, and technically that was kind of like an anthology itself if you put them all together, which we did as an episode. And there were some good ones there and some average ones and whatever. And I think we all went in blind for those two. And generally, we thought that was pretty solid. You, Eric, you said you weren't a big fan of this one here. Was it because of the stories themselves, whether it was poorly acted, poorly made, or just wasn't your type of story, or was it specifically the film itself?
I mean, all of the above. I've seen worse acting, but I've also seen better acting. The story really didn't do much for me. Yeah.
Right. No, that's fair.
I was just going to say, I was disappointed when I realized I was in an anthology. Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of anthologies either. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm already starting on a bad foot with this movie.
Right, right. Yeah. I don't know if I knew it was an anthology either when I went in blind. And then the wackiness of the supernatural part of it versus the non-supernatural was kind of strange. Well, we can get into specifics and what worked and what didn't. I don't know if there's anything else that anybody wanted to bring up that was generic to the film or the subject before we get into the spoiler part of the podcast. But anything anybody got that they wanted to bring up that was non-spoiler?
Well, I'll say that one of the things that a good anthology should have is that one standout segment. Trilogy of Terror is a great example. You got two decent but kind of unremarkable entries, and then it ends with Prey, which is the adaptation of the short story by Richard Matheson about the Zuni fetish doll. On rare occasions, you get more than one. And you can stand out in any number of ways, but here I don't think any of the stories really stand out. I don't think any of them have a gut punch of an ending. I don't know that nudity was necessary. You can be erotic without resorting to nudity. It's much easier if you have nudity, or certainly more blatant. There is a dick in this. We should warn people. Spoiler warning. And I'm not referring to a gentleman with the first name of Richard. But even that presented in a very limp way. There wasn't any real originality in the stories. And there wasn't great makeup. Certainly wasn't, no offense to anyone involved, great acting or great directing. The great thing was the premise, but the problem with the great premise is you can't blow the premise, and I think they blew the premise. So you don't get credit for having a great idea and not doing anything great with it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Mike. Because if we look at each of the three stories before we discuss them in detail, the first one was okay, but there was nothing inspiring about it. And the second one was after watching the film, I did some reviews, reading reviews like I usually do about the movie. And they were talking about how it reminded them of Saw, for example. And then the third story was
Hostile.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was Hostile. Yeah, exactly. I didn't even think of that. That's a good one. And it also brings us back to the lead character from the wraparound story, even though I felt it came out of nowhere because the lead actor or lead character from the wraparound story, we didn't really know enough about his background and his investments and things that he did that would make him, quote unquote, guilty of anything that would occur in that third story. So it didn't feel organic. In a sense, I felt so. And then, of course, the wraparound was just complete supernatural, and that didn't feel right at all with the rest of the film. But again, we'll go into spoilers about that. Also, the wraparound story and the final story, specifically speaking of what you said, Mike, Hostile, you can even look back and say it kind of reminded me of almost like the David Fincher film The Game, in a sense, as this company that exists in the background. Or even a better example maybe was the film we reviewed last year that made our top 10 horror films of the year, I think, called Follow Her, right? The one about, and that one was kind of related to sex as well, where there was a woman who worked as a online fetish model or whatever, and then she gets wrapped up in a online company that kind of goes after her and stuff, and then she has to make a choice and decide whether or not what she's going to do. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it we've kind of seen prior, and the question is, did they do enough original about it to make it feel fresh or whatnot? And I don't know if they did. And then some of the acting or reactions, not even acting, but some of the reactions of the characters based off of the script didn't necessarily fit with the urgency that the characters had to be in to act the way they did. And I felt that was a little bit weird. So we'll talk about that too. Anything else that anybody wanted to bring up that was non-spoilery that they wanted to bring up before we get into the spoiler section? All right. I guess that's pretty much all we got there. So we can go in and throw up the spoiler alert. So at this point, for folks who are curious, if you haven't seen the film, at this point, we're going to talk about everything about the film. So if you want to see the film, you can go and VOD it. At this time of March 7th, 2024, the film is only available as a VOD. So it's a video on demand for purchase or rental. Purchase is about $9.99 and rental is about, I don't know, $3.99 or $4.99, at least in the, with USD in the United States. But either way, this is where we're throwing out the spoiler alert. So the spoiler alert is up, and we'll talk about everything and anything. All right, so where do we want to begin? Let's just set it up. So there's this guy, Graham, and his friend Miles. They're doing a convention, salesman's convention or IT convention or something like that, maybe a combination of both. And our lead, Graham, is pickpocketed, but he lets the woman go as long as he gets a picture of some woman that obviously he had relations with or was a sister or whatever. We find out later who it is. And he heads to the hotel, and he meets his buddy Miles there, and Miles' phone beeps, and there's a thing called Black Rabbit. And Graham seemed to oddly know what that was, and he says, you don't want to have anything to do with that. It's bad news. It's part of the Black Web or something, or Dark Web, whatever it's called, and you should probably avoid it. And then he gets some money from Miles because he mentioned that his wallet had been lost. And he goes out walking, takes some hooks up with some drug dealer, believe it or not, which didn't feel organic, I felt. Gets high with probably like ecstasy or something. I don't know what it was. And then he hits an alley and he sees I guess it's the red district or red light district of the London area. And he goes into it, and it's a peep booth type of thing where they have strippers that you can watch through like holes or something. And that's pretty much the setup. Anything anybody wanted to add to that? All right. So anybody want to add to the beginning of the wraparound story, the wraparound story itself? That's the beginning of the film, basically.
I was a little – I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know what it was. Well, I figured out this was a – without having read any blurbs or anything, just from watching – I knew nothing going into this. I figured out really quickly that this was going to be – or suspected very quickly this was going to be an anthology. And I don't know why. I don't know what it was about it that just shouted this is going to be an anthology. I was just wondering what – you know. I'm trying to figure that out. Like, what is it in the setup before he actually gets to the little peep show that tells that said this is Did anyone pick up anything? Was I the only one? Did you guys pick it up early?
I did not pick it up at all. I didn't figure it out until the second story, honestly. I was like, why does this have nothing to do with the beginning? I don't understand. So I was having a hard time with this film.
Yeah, for me, I didn't get it until he walks into the booth and we see the woman that with the rabbit that runs the booth, and then I was saying, okay, this doesn't feel like the rest of the film that we just saw, the last 10 minutes, last 15 minutes, whatever it was. So I don't know if I knew it was going to anthology, but I knew it was changing theme in a sense from, you know, normal meaning real world to maybe something supernatural that was going on. And then when he starts seeing the tale of the man and the wife, the husband and the wife, then I was like, okay, this is a flashback? And then it just occurred to me that it was probably going to be an anthology. So that's when I figured it out. But yeah, Mike, you picked it up pretty quick. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I was just stupid with this film. I don't know.
I think it might have been because we were thrown into it so fast. And anthologies usually have to do things quickly. And I'm wondering if that might have been it. Or it just seems to be some sort of a feel to it. I don't know.
I was getting a Hellraiser feel from the wraparound story.
Well, speaking of something that does fetishes really well, and I point out, does a fetish thing without nudity. I mean, a lot of revealed skin in multiple ways, but it's, you know, but they managed to get a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point, Mike. Yeah. Though, for some reason, this film seemed more apt to be different. And I don't know, something about it, like the scenes, specifically like the first story, that one made sense that it would be more nudity. But I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It's like those films where the people have sex on a TV show or a movie and they're not nude. And we know like, that's not how it is in real life, right. You know, but go on, Mike.
No, I think they really should have taken a lesson from X. And that it had nudity, but it didn't, I don't think it overdid it. And I don't think it did it in a way that, felt completely cheap and gratuitous and unerotic. But, you know, that an X is basically, you know, the idea of turning a porn movie into a horror movie. And so something like that would have kind of fit with this theme or done it in somewhat of a similar style. Not the same that means like that was a 70s grindhouse thing, but I think they could have been a little more daring in how they approached the filmmaking here. Add a little bit more forthright. Look, there's the scene where she takes the guy's dick out and the second thing, and that was certainly a thing, but it was like the only moment of daring that I think I saw, and at this point, I don't even know how daring that is.
Right.
Well, and I don't think it needed nudity. The problem is it was trying to be very sexualized, and it had no nudity, so I felt like they were running away from the very theme they were trying to promote, and so it felt off, and that's what bothered me about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't need to see nudity, and it doesn't have to be in a movie, but
for this film, it not having a nudity oddly takes you out of it. Like a lot of people say, oh, the nudity in that film over there takes you out of the film because you could tell that it's intentional and gratuitous and whatever. Here, it was like the opposite. It was intentionally and non-gratuitous, and therefore it didn't fit with what we were seeing, and it just seemed weird as well.
Well, I think if you're going to pay to see a movie called Bloodbath, you would expect to see at least a little blood in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Now that doesn't mean that you can't get a really good movie called Bloodbath that has no blood in it. But you're gonna have to fight extra hard to be a really damn good movie where people go, but you know what? It was great otherwise. Right. Otherwise people are coming, you know, think of was it the third Wreck film that was Wreck Apocalypse?
Right, I was thinking the exact same
thing. It was just Wreck on a boat. Now, if they called it Wreck on a Boat, I think audiences might have liked it more, but it wasn't. It was called Wreck Apocalypse, and you walked out going, where was the apocalypse? It was just on a boat?
Yeah.
And here, you know, there's really not much sexual in it, to me.
Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, if I'm like 13, maybe you'd find it erotic.
Right. Well, and it's very interesting, too, because I was thinking of another anthology film from the UK called Little Deaths, which had was a wraparound, I believe, of three stories. And Simon Rumley, actually, the director, he has one of the stories in that. And that film was similar, because Little Deaths is a term for orgasm, basically. And it was a horror film. And so it had similar themes in the sense, but the thing was, is it went for broke, and so it worked really good, and there was the nudity, and there was the violence, and there was the even supernatural in some of the stories, and it worked really good as a great film. Here, it just seemed strange. And so I would concur, Mike, having the title Midnight Peep Show and then a not daring kind of hurt the film a bit. It's like you said, if you had a film called Bloodbath, or if you had a film called, you know, that Wreck film, the Apocalypse film, or if there was a film called Zombie Apocalypse and there's no zombies in it, you know.
It's porno and there's no nudity in it.
Yeah, right.
And I think, like, there's a market. Like, you go out there, there's a lot of horror sex books out there. I am not saying any of them are any good. And I haven't said, and I honestly have not read any of them. But, like, I know Rap James Wright, who wrote the book,
oh, yeah.
The Resurrectionist. Rap James Wright wrote the book, The Resurrectionist.
Yeah, Eric a lot read of it's called, book. It's called
He wasn't a big fan of the book, but he is a splatterpunk author, and I know he has, because through Scares the Care, we're friends on Facebook, and I know he's got sort of like some sort of fetish, like S&M.
Yeah, he posted that recently, yeah.
And why would you not maybe go to one of these guys and buy one of their stories or ask them to spice up your thing? I mean, I know why. Budget, right? Money. But a lot of these authors aren't getting paid a lot, right? They're selling their books for $1.99 on Amazon. And it's some of it's just special. But I think they could do something interesting or lowbrow, one way or another. And I don't want it. And I feel weird because I feel like I wanted more porn in this movie, which isn't really what I'm saying. I just wanted it to be more interesting. And you can do things like for well. What was the movie? I think of a movie which they were kind of getting to. I think maybe that was where the movie in the was it the 90s or the early 2000s was Boxing Helena.
Oh yeah.
You know those. That's the kind of, to me, that's body horror. That, and this is, by the way, great venue for body horror. That kind of creeped me out. American
pretty
Mary.
Sure, pretty out. Sure 90s on that one.
I think so. I remember reading about it in the Cinema Fantastique.
Yeah, 1993, Boxing Helena, right? And then you mentioned the what's the other one called by the Saska sisters? What was that one called?
American Mary.
Yeah, American Mary. Yeah, you mentioned that one.
Which you know gets into the whole body modification thing. You can get into a lot of weird stuff there. I mean, you can, for Christ's sakes. I mean. People make joke about like furry conventions, and I watched the movie last year, which I completely forgot about at the end of the year list. Actually, that's not true. I remembered it, And then after remembering it, I promptly forgot it and somehow didn't end up on my list. But it was the movie Good Boy, which is about a man dressed up as a dog. And where that ends up going. You know, and that's it's creepy. It is creepy stuff. It is weird stuff. I understand why they might not want to go to these places, because they do make things uncomfortable for people. But you're way more likely to attract a diehard audience. I think of Terrifier. Terrifier turned off a lot of people. And not just for the story, for the violence. And Terrifier 2 also turned off a lot of people, even though it had a better story, because there's a lot of gratuitous violence there. But it also won a whole lot of hardcore fans, because all you really need to break through in this market is a small group of hardcore fans.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. But.
Right. Well, and that determines what gets notoriety or notice or becomes a cult film or creates a franchise, you know, and sometimes you can hit it out of the ballpark, like that film did, Terrifier, and sometimes you can have the quote unquote miss opportunity that some of the reviews I read stated about this film here, and that's I think most certainly fair.
And I don't mind you stealing ideas. I mean, God's sakes, we all know there's not a lot of new ideas out there. But stealing from Saw for a horror film?
Right.
I mean, that's just blatant copying. That's like Tarantino steals, but he steals like from I Was an Indian Love Bride or something weird that nobody else has seen except for him. And you know, he doesn't steal like the opening shot from Star Wars of the Star Destroyer. He doesn't go for the easy things. And same here, they're just you pick Saw and Hostel or Saw and any number of other some rich people paying. What was the Unfriended? Was it the second Unfriended film?
Yeah, that's what I said to Phil online that it sounded like that. Yeah,
it seemed like that too.
The second Unfriended, yeah.
And again, I don't think that's a bad thing.
If you do it better, or at least equal.
If you went someplace with it, and if it's one of your three stories, but when two of your three stories are so, so derivative, and even the first one, I felt like it was kind of like the game, but without the twist, because it felt like there could have been a twist, and they said, nah, there's not going to be a twist, or that the twist was that there was no twist, or something bizarre.
Yep.
Was just and they're unlikable characters in that first anthology, the first segment. To me,
right?
Yeah, none of them are nice. Are nice people?
Right, right. And basically, when you find out the twist of the first one, it made it even less. It made it actually. Well, whether we find out the twist or not, because there's a home invader, and what the home invader does. It felt that it should have had oddly have gratuitous nudity, because he's a home invader. He doesn't care about the dignity of the people and whatnot. And whether or not there's a twist or not, the twist also would say, there should be again more nudity and stuff. And
all these people watching.
Yeah. So it's just bizarre. But the main thing, I think, what Mike is saying here is it was very derivative.
Yes.
And I think that was the problem.
I figured the first story out very quickly before they even had gotten to the twist. I mean, it was too obvious.
I thought
it was going to play out.
Yeah, and for me, I thought it was at first just bad acting, because when the guy has a gun – so there's basically what it is this couple who are fighting, and you can get an idea that the husband may have cheated at some point in the past, but they're still trying to work it out. And he gets a call from downstairs that someone needs to move, that he has to move his car. And when he goes out, he comes back with a home intruder that basically has a gun to his head. And when the woman says, fuck off to a guy that has a gun, I was saying, okay, this is either bad screenwriting or there's going to be a big twist. And it was the big twist. I mean, it still could have been bad screenwriting, but it was definitely the big twist, which was she was in on it, right? And you, Barrett, you said you figured it out pretty quick.
Before they even – as he was coming up the stairs, I was like, okay, she's in on it with this guy, whoever it is. It just was too obvious.
What about you, Mike? Did you see
I was
that?
It's set on Valentine's Day, and they're in an acrimonious part of their marriage. He makes him – was it made Valentine's Day card or was it a purchased one? I don't remember.
But she made him a Valentine's card.
With a Valentine's Day card with like a black heart on it, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of a shot more than something nice.
Right.
And he – you know, missing all the obvious signs like advertisements and hanging in every window wherever you go, and people telling you, talking, what are you doing for Valentine's Day? Completely forgot to get her something. And this is right after they have a spat, and he calls her a cunt. So that's not a good way to introduce your character.
even if it's in England.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
even if she agrees with you.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, as he comes up the stairs with the gun, I was like, is this some sort of elaborate thing like the game where it's going to be this is part of some weird-ass Valentine's Day gift? Like, does she have some fetish that by doing this, he's going to get her off and, like, play into her fetish? Because there are women who have rape fantasies. They don't want to be raped for real. It's just a weird, it's a thing. I'm not a woman. I don't get it, and I'm not saying it's for all women, but it's a thing. But there's a difference between it being a fantasy thing and a real thing. So what if he like did this to try to get her fantasy? And that's where they were going with this, the idea of a dark or dangerous wish fulfillment. It could also be a be careful what you wish for thing, especially when she's enjoying the ride, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which also, like, made it really weird to me. Because it's like, if this isn't a joke, it's a little creepy that she's enjoying getting raped. So that was also something that makes it a little off-putting. When you're not really sure, especially as your first entry, and you're trying to figure out what the vibe of this series, and it's because it's a horror movie, potentially a franchise is going to be.
Well, and at this point, we don't know that there's this overarching company that is doing this weird stuff.
Right. Well, because he gets the card before, as part of the wraparound. I wasn't surprised. I figured that was going to be like the through line. Mm-hmm. You know, this company making your dreams come true, for lack of a better term, whether you like it or not. But, yeah.
Well, and the end message I just thought was, I don't know, something about it. It's like he's bad because he's an investor in this company, because he didn't research everything about this company. He's just a bad person. He deserved to die because those women died to it. I don't know. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah, that was really weird. I thought that was the main problem with the story, because based off of how he acted in the third story, he seemed like a pretty decent guy. To be honest, and
he was trying to save her.
Yeah. Whether he was in, right. And he just wanted a normal marriage too. Right. You know, yeah. And whether he got into drugs or whatever, you know, in the flash forwards, meaning the present, you know, who knows what horrible things like that can do to a person that we see in this third story, that I didn't hold any of that against them either. So I felt that was an unrewarded punishment, especially
yeah.
like you said, Barrett. He was just an investor in a company, and there was nothing to state when he invested in the company that it was going to be doing the horrible things that it would do.
Yeah, just because it's making him money doesn't mean he's a bad guy.
Right, right, exactly. And it just didn't feel like it was a just guilty thing to happen to him, which did. It was strange. And obviously, it seemed like, you know, coincidental that his wife or girlfriend would find the company. And if they knew he was an investor, why would they even bother with her, too? It was just strange.
Yeah, and she... I mean, they made some kind of excuse because she's in IT. Oh, that must be how she found us. I mean, it's like, yeah, because we're all us IT people are, you know, searching the dark web for the weirdest things we could possibly find for our life to be more interesting.
Was that Eric?
I said, nah, just Phil.
Just Phil what?
You can take that last
story. The dark web.
You can take that.
I don't get the joke.
And
okay.
You can take that last story, and where she has this, where she's getting turned on by being paid for sex, right? Making her husband pay her for sex.
Right.
And I'm not going to kink shame here. I'm just saying it's a weird fetish.
Yeah.
But if it's a fetish that's out there, okay, whatever floats your boat. And then she decides to go chase after it. And then becomes something, gets herself put in a position where she's going to be paid a fortune for other people's sexual gratification, and then, but is immediately going to regret what that means.
She didn't regret it.
But they don't go through with it. They kind of cop out by having her die on, the table.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Right, as opposed to doing something like where Freaks, where something as horrible is done to her and her life is irrevocably altered at the end because some people were going to get off on her mutilation. No, it would have been weird. It would have been creepy. But it would have stuck with me a whole lot more than what they did.
Yes.
Right.
I think, you know, I don't think there's anything remarkable about, again, there are people who have rape fantasies. And like, I'm not judging. You know, if it's a role-playing thing and you enjoy doing that in role-play, you know, God bless you. Go do that. But you can also see how you can turn that into a horror thing of a rape fantasy gone wrong. You could do it from the side of the guy who's enticed into enacting this fantasy for this woman, and then like turns out maybe he raped the wrong person, and he actually did rape somebody, and he didn't mean to. He just thought it was play acting, or she decides to turn him in anyway. You know, even though she paid him to do it. There's all sorts of things you could do with that, and I think they just went in a very uninteresting way. Guy comes in, she has sex with him, he kills them. The end.
Right. Well, I kind of like the underground aspect of it, where it's like, oh my God, what did you get yourself into, and the horrible things that could happen. It actually kind of reminded me a little bit of Serbian film, in a sense, because that kind of happens in that film too. But the thing is here, it wasn't her story. It was really Graham's story. So what happens to her was just something that moves along Graham's story. And so when Graham's story goes back to the present, where he's in the peep show building, and the supernatural occurs, it's just weird. Because, like, what was the point of that third story if it was really about him and not about her? I don't know. I just felt like she was the...
I got it.
Yeah. So that kind of was the disappointment, because the special effects were horrible, but if they were good, I would have been, wow, that was pretty interesting, even though it was telegraphed. You know, you knew something like that was going to probably happen. But the thing that made it even more interesting is that, okay, he's the investor, and they said, oh yeah, we can't do this to an investor. We'll clean this up for you. It was like, oh, that's interesting. Even though, again,
but then he's killed anyway. That's what I was like. What the?
Well, and it was weird too, because he's killed by two ghosts, and one of the ghosts from the first story, he has nothing to do with it. That right. Was her own evilness. She had nothing to do with that. And then the second one, I don't even know why she was a ghost, because she didn't die.
She didn't die, yeah.
So I was completely confused.
They got to live.
Yeah, and then in the third one, I don't think it was his fault either, because she was just a weirdo. She obviously had behavioral health issues.
She decided to do it.
Nice. Yeah, he even said it too. He goes, my wife, you know, to the guy to let him into the building, my wife has behavioral health issues, and you know, I got to get her out of there and all this other stuff. And he also, I think, said it to her friend Jill, and it wasn't his fault. If anything, he was actually helping her have a stable life. So, it was unjust what happened to him. Unjust rewards for what he did. It was like he didn't do anything really awful that made me say, oh, good, that happened to him. You know, so it didn't fit right. And again, why were they ghosts?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. And like you said, Barrett and Mike, the first story, none of those characters were you liked anyway. So, I mean, since they're all fictional characters, it wasn't like I felt sorry that woman died. You know, so for her wanting to get revenge on some random investor, it didn't make any sense.
Right. Because she set up this whole scheme, not because he was an investor.
Right, and that's the thing, is that scheme that she set up, you don't need a black rabbit to set up that scheme.
No, she could have done that without them completely.
Right.
She wouldn't have gotten paid for it like she was getting paid for it. But
the second one, yeah, that one would be a black rabbit kind of thing, right? That would be the kind of thing you could see needing someone to help you pull it off. Right.
It was like the Belko experiment or something like that, right? Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we haven't even really talked about the second, which is basically, I think, isn't there a series or something of this on Netflix? I never watched it, but it is murder,
Right. Well, I'll say this, Mike, whether there's a show on Netflix or not, I mean, this I've heard from many people, like when I even guest host Lacey's podcast, they asked me between Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift, and Katy Perry, marry, fuck, and kill. You know, and because I guess this is a thing that college kids and people say, it's a thing that people say when you're hanging out at a bar, I guess. And it's a known game, I guess, people do. You know, and so I'm guessing here they decided to make it into something real where you actually would marry someone, you actually would fuck them, and you would actually kill the third one. And
then there was the variant on that, which was the Human Centipede Edition, where you – who is which which part of the centipede, who's first, who's the middle, and who's the end. But
So it is a known game. That when Lacey asked me that, because I guess they asked that to all their guest hosts, that hadn't that wasn't new to me. I've heard that before on people talking about that, where they would say that. Or I've even asked
I'm more interested in your answers to that rather than this movie.
Yep.
Right. yeah, well, I know. It was weird. It's like I don't want to kill anybody. So it was like stupid. But I can't even remember what I said. I think I said Cyrus was the one that I would kill, though. And not because I dislike her. It's just that, Katy Perry and she's just really good looking. And then Taylor Swift is my musical hero. So I probably said the fuck for Perry and Mary Taylor or something, but
well, I mean I have and I don't mean this in any with any real animosity. I have literally zero interest in Taylor Swift except as a way to sometimes tweak you. But she would be the Mary one because she's worth a fucking fortune.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But this was like 4 years ago. So it was before that, you know, she became huge like she is now. But that's a fair point, Mike.
And then you kill Miley Cyrus because, honestly, her father wrote Achy Breaky Heart and he needs to be punished for that.
What are we even talking about here?
But either way, back to the film. My only point with that analogy was that I've heard it before, even when I was podcasting. Yeah. So, but here they take it for real. So basically, there's three guys tied up, and then there's this woman who's dressed up in a wedding dress, and there's cameras and a speaker. Similar to like Saw, and the guy basically says you gotta fuck one, marry one, and kill one, and the woman in the dress has to make that decision. And so you have these three guys arguing with each other and arguing with her, trying to, you know, win favor. So
this one was oddly a little funny. I did laugh a few times, but.
Yeah.
It was funny.
It was the one that the acting was the least believable because, and that maybe, like you said, it was supposed to be funny or something. I don't know, because there's no way they were too casual. The all four of them, and they weren't there. They didn't have urgency, and they were acting a lot. Some of them were acting too cocky or too silly at points when you would think they would try to be kind to each other, trying to, you know, win favor to with the woman or something. And it was just strange. The whole thing was strange, I felt.
And then, I don't know. I just had weird things with the setup. I guess people were paying to watch the entertainment, but it was like, you know, you have 30 seconds to choose the one you're going to. And she drops the ring, and she has to go fishing for the ring. It's like, well, you know, you can hit the pause button. She's made the choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
You got 15 seconds to make him come, and she's barely got the dick out of the pants. It's like, I don't care how quick you are. That's asking a lot to get somebody to perform under that kind of pressure, especially after you've just electrocuted them like three times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I would be able to do that no problem. 10 seconds.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Guess that. Three times.
Exactly. I mean, she was pretty good looking, but even if you're one, you know, it was your first time, you were a virgin, with all the people looking and electricity and all that other crap, even you wouldn't have premature ejaculation on that. So it was really weird that.
Well, I bet I would.
They had. I don't know, dude. I mean, I think the guy had a good point, which is...
Bert sounds pretty excited about it.
When the guy said that...
I think he might have a car battery next to his bed.
Maybe.
Under the bed. Come on.
But I'm right there with you, Mike. It felt like, yeah, I mean, there was a little... Not enough time for... It was strange. They should have gave... it shouldn't have been 5 minutes for each. It should have been like 15 for that one, and then five for the other two, maybe, or something. I don't know. I mean, it's just strange.
Come on, man. I need some time.
But yeah, so it was three guys that she knew, one that she was dated for 4 years that she cheated on and or dumped or something, and then one was a one-night stand, and then one was an affair with this yoga instructor guy. And oddly, the guy that she was with for 4 years was the one that seemed the most shady, I felt. It's kind of strange. I don't know why.
I disagreed with her choices. I would have fucked the yoga guy.
Well, the guy that she was with for 4 years was shady, right? Wasn't he like, he's the one that set it all up?
Yeah, that we find out that he must have set it up because he got loose from the straps right after everything was completed.
Well, and he tells them to help him out. Like he says that to the games master.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and
true.
They help him out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to ensure that she forgets all about it, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I don't think she can, right? She has to stay with the guy or because they're always going to be watching.
Yeah.
That's something for a better movie to worry about.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Yeah. So the guy that she fucked, I think, lucked out the most because they're not going to be watching him except to make sure he doesn't tell anybody, and I mean, he ain't going to tell a soul, so he's going to walk away scot-free. And
the real question is, does he take the doll out before he does?
Yeah, that was a little weird.
The rabbit dildo.
yeah, that was weird. But as you said, Mike, you know, people's fetishes, whatever. It's not my business. But yeah, that one was I would like to say it was the weakest story, though the first one you could argue is the weakest story. But the second one, the acting of the characters didn't feel real enough. So I don't know which was the one I disliked more. I
definitely like the third one the best of the three.
Yeah, for sure. I most certainly like the third one the best as well. Anything else with the first or second stories that we wanted to bring up? Anybody had on their list? Mike or anything? Do you have anything on your list about the first or second stories?
I don't have a list.
What about you, Mike?
No, I think I've said my piece. I mean, I don't know that I found I don't know. I think the guys in the second piece were all not great. Obviously, you don't want to make it easy on the woman to choose who to marry. I don't know. I didn't feel the sort of
right. Well,
I didn't feel like there were great choices in a way that it felt like, maybe this guy, maybe that guy. None of them felt like a horrible choice. None of them felt like a great choice. It was all kind of meh choices. So I didn't care who she killed. I didn't care who she fucked. I didn't care who she married.
And even how she chose, it didn't really make much sense. I mean, Eric, you mentioned a good point, which is, you know, why didn't she just fuck the yoga guy? But they added, you know, lines that pissed her off here or there and made her say, well, all right, I'm just going to do this third guy who I don't know really as much and stuff. But I don't know. You're right. It didn't make any rhyme or reason. It was almost like you could predict she was going to pick the guy she picked to marry in a sense too. I don't know. It was, yeah. It's like you said, Mike, it's like, it didn't matter. Who cares? Whatever. What about all right? So let's go move on to the third story. So basically, this is the story that brings in Graham from the wraparound story. So this story includes him, and basically he lives with this woman who
I thought he was married to her.
Yeah,
yeah, they're married. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's married to this woman who we learn later has some behavioral health issues, but generally, you know, is besides some issues, she has depression or whatever. She can function normally in society, so it's not like cluster A. Yeah. She's a little younger, and she's bored, I guess, and she wants to spice up her life, and somehow she gets contacted by the Black Rabbit, and she agrees to do it, and they tell her, and again, it's this website, they tell her to have him pay for sex to spice it up, and so she's going to pretend that she's a prostitute to get excitement in their relationship, and when she does it, it surprised him, but it was kind of interesting. And so, you know, he does, and they have great sex and whatever. And then the next time the website tells her, you know, are you ready to continue? And she goes, yes. And, you know, you can't turn back or whatever. And so she asks again for money. And the second time for him, it's not exciting anymore because it's now becoming weird. And they have a big fight over it, and he doesn't want to do it. He goes, I'd rather not. Why don't we just, you know, have normal sex? Or why don't we just be a normal couple? Or why don't we, instead of even having sex tonight, maybe we just go out and have dinner and see a movie or something? And she gets all pissed and says, I want a divorce, which came out of, like, left field, I felt.
Well, I don't think it's actually the second time. I think they've been doing it for a little while, and he's finally tired of it. That's the sense I got from it.
All right. That could be true. Yeah, that's fair.
And, it was cool for a little while, but now he's, like, done with that. I don't need to be paying you for sex. We're married, damn it.
you're right. I think it has been for a little bit, yeah, because she mentions it to her friend, Jill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it was and it kind of makes sense because, you know, after a few times, it's like, why – this is just weird. Why can't we just – be normal, you know. I mean, usually something like that you would think would spice it up, and then once it's spiced up, you can just drop it and things will be back to normal again. But for her, it was almost like an OCD or something where that's the only way she can be excited and not bored anymore. And I don't know. So yeah, it didn't work anymore for him. So where do we want to go with this story? What do we want to talk about? Anything anybody wanted to bring up besides, I guess directly related to the Black Rabbit and their relationship?
He's basically rich, I guess, we find out, because she doesn't even really have to work, and he tells her that at some point. But she's like, it's not about the money. I want you to give me this sex, you know, money for sex, but it's not about the money, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, he's just trying to get her out of that at some point and not have her in that. And everything he tries fails, and he eventually gets his ass kicked trying to do that.
Yeah, because since he won't cooperate, she actually becomes a streetwalker or an escort or whatever. And he follows her and finds out, and so he tries to stop her, and one of her Johns beats the hell out of her. And because she's getting, you know, banged in the alley or whatever, someone from Black Rabbit is filming it. And stuff, and the whole thing's just weird because it's like she's this white collar professional, educated, and whatnot, and now she's becoming basically an OnlyFans in a sense, or whatever, escort or something, and it's just strange.
Is the word, Phil?
Yeah,
being treated like a whore.
Yeah, fair enough. And he the husband obviously isn't happy about it. And then her friend Jill doesn't hear from her much anymore either. And so it's just, the whole thing's just strange. She's just gone. And, but, you know, he still loves her and all that. So he's trying to get her out of that and come home. So it actually even kind of reminded me of the film A Day of Wine and Roses, but with prostitution instead of alcoholism. And so he gets beaten up, and then she goes further down the rabbit hole. And, you know, this is Alice in Wonderland theme, except it's of a black rabbit instead of a white rabbit. The website uses that as a theme. And I kind of guessed that she was going to be, like, at that point, like, they were going to just burn her, meaning the website was going to use her for the killer or snuff film or something. Did you guys get that? Did you guys knew she was doomed even before it happened?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I figured it was going to be bad. I wasn't sure about doomed. Like, I didn't think they were going to chainsaw her.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know if maybe they were going to just, like they said, they were going to cut off her arm, one arm and one leg.
Well, she, oh, I thought she dotted her whole back. I guess it was a leg.
Well, I don't know, because I mean, I know. Because
yeah,
there are people that have, like, amputation fetishes.
Yeah.
Like, I was wondering if they were just going to then just start prostituting her, make her an amputee. They could prostitute her to those gentlemen, and possibly ladies. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we didn't get to learn enough to know. I wasn't sure if they were just going to use her for that one film where they were going to chop off her arm from the elbow up, her left arm, and then, yeah, it was her leg, Barrett, not her back, where they were going to cut off the knee and from and below.
That makes me think of that movie, David Cronenberg movie, Crash, I think it's called, where they get into car accidents and they lose limbs and everything.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you guys mentioned Boxing Helena, too. So, if things didn't go wrong, I don't know if they would have killed her. Obviously, she died because things went wrong, because he tried to do the rescue. And by doing that, he injures the nurse, the quote-unquote nurse, who was then drops the chainsaw.
She's a trained doctor, Phil.
Yeah, that's right.
Trained doctor.
That's right. That's what they said. And she chops off the woman's head instead. Now, unfortunately, the graphic, the violence, no matter how acceptable it was for a horror film, it was all CGI, and it was just really bad. The blood looked terrible. The head falling off the table looked terrible. You could tell.
None of that was impressive.
I don't know. Is it that much cheaper nowadays to just make crappy CGI than?
Yes,
it's but, yeah. To make crappy CGI, to make good CGI is expensive.
But I would have just been happy if they'd done like the old European films and used red paint and just flashed that all over the place.
Yeah,
and then somebody, you know, diet.
Somebody made a great point years ago to me, which is that when you're making, and they weren't, it wasn't like to me personally, but something I read or something I watched, you have to do multiple takes.
Yep.
And you have, that means you have to spend, you know, like an hour cleaning up all the red paint when you have to do your next take.
Yeah.
And, you know, or once you get it's just easier to put it on digitally and after the fact. And you could just do a bunch of takes in an hour where before it might have taken you, you know, 10 hours to do 5 takes because of all the blood. And it's the time that's really the money.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, I didn't think of that. Because yeah, you know, you have to wash the clothes and you have to clean up the paint off the ground or whatever.
You know, the actor who's got, you know, blood all over the face. Big disgrace.
Yeah. Well done, Mike.
That was a delayed reaction.
that was well done, Mike. That was well done. But even the head, I mean, the head was from a distance where the head falls off, and they could have
still looked bad.
Yeah, they could have used like a paper mache head or something and just gone with that, and it was far enough away that that would have looked better than the fake CGI head. It was terrible.
Yeah, but time is money, and we're wasting time talking about this.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to give the movie its fair credit, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, Mike, you're right about time, cleanup, and stuff, but sometimes maybe that's worth it than having the crappy special effects that we saw in this last part of the anthology when it was pretty solid up to that point. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was good enough. I mean, it was interesting enough, I felt, you know, for
I know there are people who are outraged by it, but I've seen enough bad CGI, and it's mostly it's not as bad as it used to be. And it's, a lot of it's still sometimes noticeable, but yeah, it I can roll
you
with it.
You want to see some bad CGI, go watch some stuff from the 90s.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a whole generation what, Gen Z that grew up in the the millennials who grew up in the 90s and the 2000s to shitty special effects and will look back fondly on those with nostalgia in a way that we just can't identify with.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, like, you know, I remember watching The Outer Limits with my mom, and it still freaked her out, even though you knew that the creature that they were showing was you know, just a thing on a string, you know?
Yes, yeah, but, exactly. And that's why I was just thinking that same thing. It's like some bug creature that's being pulled along.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, maybe for younger people, crappy CGI is nostalgic to them, like Rubber Spider was for my mother from Outer Limits. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it never occurred to me that's the reason why they use fake blood, meaning CGI blood, is because they don't have to do any cleanup and they can do like 20 takes in an hour instead of 5 in 4 hours or something or whatever. But it unfortunately for me kind of sucks because it took me out of the film when it's so fake. But
he'll get over it.
Yeah, yeah.
You sure. Probably won't even think of this movie for any length of time past now.
That's true. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about the third story in the anthology? Mike, you got anything on your list, or Barrett, or Eric, whatever? Do you want to bring up anyone?
Eric said he doesn't have a list.
Right, that's true. So
we've talked about what I had.
Right. What about you, Mike? Anything else on the third story?
No, not really. I that was probably the one I found. No, that's the first one. The first one was least interesting. And then there's stuff. I don't know. Yeah, nothing more.
All right. So let's talk about the end of the wrap-up story. We brought some of it up already about, you know, the three ghosts and stuff. But what? Anything else that anybody wanted to bring up about the ghosts and Graham's ending and all that stuff? I felt it ruined whatever was good about the film. It just was like, oh, this kind of stunk, the ending.
Yeah, it had this weird message that just didn't feel right and justified.
Yeah, yeah.
You bad investors, you. You shouldn't make money. And if you do, it's your fault that this stuff happens. All the gun violence in the world, it's your fault.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. It's like, all right, if people have these weird fetishes and they don't want to be safe when it comes to sex, it's unfortunate, but I mean,
it's their choice.
People are going to be people. So it's like, I don't know. No one pressured anybody to do any of these things.
In fact, they went out of their way to do them themselves, except for the people in the second one.
Yeah, the second ones and the guy and the husband in the first one.
Yeah,
were the only ones that were, whether they were good people or not, is besides the point, that they were victims of the Black Rabbit. So they got screwed. But again, that had nothing to do with Graham either, in a sense. I mean, I don't even know if he knew they were doing anything illegal until he found out his wife got stuck in it, and he found out that she was
coming. Then he started to research, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it was just strange, the whole thing. And then he didn't even know anything until Jill did the research and said, yeah, people disappear. They disappear people when they get whatever. And then, of course, Jill gets disappeared.
Well, but, did she? We don't even know, do we? We just know that it said she's going to die.
Right. Yeah.
But they never actually show it. It just never happened. You know, nothing happens.
Right. I think they would have been better if they had like a black silhouette in the background that wasn't supposed to be there, and then they cut, and it's like, okay, you know what's going to happen. But without having that, we're just assuming that she got wiped out.
Yeah, like unfriended dark web, they die.
Yeah, right, exactly. We see them die, yeah, exactly. And Belko Experiment and all these other films that are like that. So Miles, his friend, decides to press yes to, and so he does it. I mean, do people have this? Are this people that bored with regular sex that they do these weird fetishes? I guess.
There's a lot of people out there.
Remember what I said at the beginning, Phil? Just go Google weird fetishes, and we'll see you next week.
Repeat that, Mike. I don't get that one.
I said go Google.
Yeah.
Weird fetishes.
Oh, I see. And then we'll talk, and I'll tell you what I've discovered next week.
Yes. Oh, I'd like to see that. I'd like to hear that.
I don't know. That's a horrible idea.
Yeah. It's a great idea, Eric. What are you talking about?
We lost half the audience when I said to do that at the beginning of the podcast.
Right. So, yeah. So, I guess people are, I don't know. People, I've always
just. They're weird. Or strange, as Jim Morrison said.
Yeah, you're right. I just. Yeah, I mean, for me, I just want it normalcy. I just don't want drama.
And maybe what you do is not normal to them. So, you know, each their own.
Yeah, all right. Well, let me rephrase. I just don't want drama. And that just, what they're doing just adds more drama to things, it seems. It's just like unnecessary. Unnecessary stress. Even though I guess they like living on the edge, though, right? That's part of the excitement.
The adrenaline rush.
Yeah. 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 So there you go. I don't know.
Are they like pain? I mean, there are people that like pain. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm wondering if they're just unhappy people or not. Or maybe they are not. Aren't behavioral health individuals, and they just have weird ideas. Or let me rephrase, different ideas. But I'll just say weird ideas. They're
different
weird.
Needs, different ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Anyway, it's just strange. It didn't surprise me that they had Miles decide to press yes on the app.
No, I mean, that was pretty predictable.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you get the final vision of the person that's running the peep show, and she's got those blackened hands or whatever, and it's got a little supernatural feel to it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I still don't get why they had to add the supernatural part to it. That was weird. And I also got a laugh out of it that the black rabbit was all Russians. Oh, jeez. But yeah, the supernatural part just didn't fit with the rest of the film. I mean, that's how they got him to see the stories, I guess. But I still didn't think it fit. And then also, I still don't know why Helen, which was the woman in the wedding dress, was one of the three ghosts. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense. I agree.
They should have showed her getting killed off or something, divorcing her husband, and then the rabbit taking her away or something, and then we would have got that she was dead. But otherwise, her just appearing dead at the end when she didn't die made no sense. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about the last part, or the film in general? Anyone?
No, I'll put Eric out of his misery. I don't have anything else to say.
Thank you, Jesus.
What about you, Mike?
I'm tapped.
All right.
As long as I can, but I think Eric's exhausted.
He's got to go practice his fetishes.
I got nothing either more to talk about. So, all right. So I guess that pretty much wraps up Midnight Peep Show. But before we wrap up the episode, we have some time for what we've been watching and things of that nature. So, Eric, what do you got? Any video games, movies, books, TV shows that would interest us? Yes.
I have a follow-up from something I mentioned earlier. In December, I ordered a special edition Blu-ray from Australia of The Hitcher.
Oh, yeah. I remember you mentioned that.
And we had a brief conversation of, is it a Region B disc and will you be able to watch it?
Right.
Well, here's the story. It is, in fact, a Region B disc. But I can watch it anyway. I tried it. I put it in my player. It loads. It plays. I haven't done a rewatch yet because I'm waiting for when Dan comes over. But yeah, so I was confused.
Hey, I got a question. So, is it 4K?
No, it is just a Blu-ray.
Because I was going to say, I saw something about how 4Ks are not region specific.
Well, and here's the thing. It's all very, very confusing, Barrett. So I did a little research to try and get some clarity for myself today. So I'm going to share that with our listeners, which is that 4K discs are region free. Any 4K player will play any 4K disc. Apparently, a number of 4K players that are sold will play multiple regions of Blu-rays, but it's not something they really advertise.
They don't want you to know that, yeah.
So I actually went back and found the player that I own on Amazon, and it says nothing on there how people play multiple region Blu-rays. But this Region B disc is playing just fine in my player. Apparently, there's also a couple of popular Sony 4K players that will play multiple regions of discs as well. Apparently, the ones that play multiple regions will do A, B, and C.
I'm now, really surprised they haven't firmwared those out.
Now, your 4K player, that's not a Sony. Which one is it?
Mine is a Philips.
Okay.
And I got it. I bought it back in 2018. And the reason I picked that particular one is because it supports Dolby Vision, which at the time was not common. You had to search a little bit to find one that had Dolby Vision on it. So that's why I made the selection of the particular player that I have. It's still, I don't know if it's being actively manufactured anymore. You can still, they've got 4 on stock at Amazon. It costs $350. So it's not cheap. 4K players aren't like, you know, you can go pick up a Blu-ray player at Best Buy for like $89.99 or whatever. That's not the case with 4K players. They're a little more pricey. I figure they got you. They know if you're into the 4K, you're gonna pay it. So yeah, that's the story. You can get a 4K player that will play multiple regions of Blu-ray discs. I don't know off the top of my head every single one that exists. There are some listings on Amazon as I was looking around that, like particularly on some of the Sony players that do say, all region Blu-ray playback. So you can find it if you look. So that's the deal. The Hitcher special edition that I got, it's got groovy new cover art. It's got a bunch of little postcards with still shots from the movie. And it's got a wonderful little glossy booklet that's like, I don't know, 30, 40 pages. That has like different artwork for posters and cover art. And some production notes from the movie, like the whole opening scene of the movie, it has like, it's basically a script page where it's got all the stage direction, you know, about him being on the side of the road and getting picked up and whatever. So if you're into the movie like I am, and not afraid to spend money, and are confident that you have a player that will play a Region B disc, I would recommend it. But it is not cheap, and it ships from Australia. So I think it was technically released like the third week of February. And I just got it yesterday. So it takes a while to get here. So, but other than all that, yeah, thumbs up. So yeah, other than that, I've been pretty much just, I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 a lot. And I think I have the thing that's going to get Phil. Because in this game, there's a romance element. And in the game, you find companions that'll join your party, and you can hook up with them. You can see boobies, Phil. You can see boobies in this game. I've actually got three different members of my party right now that want to hook up with me. You got to be careful because some of them don't like each other, and if you hook up with one, it'll make somebody else mad. But here's the biggest reason that Phil needs to get this game is because one of the people that you can hook up with is a druid. And when you hook up with him, he shapeshifts into a bear. So this is your exposure for therapy, Phil. You need to play Baldur's Gate 3 and hook up with a bear, and you won't be afraid of him not anymore.
And it's a boy bear, too?
Yeah.
Well, you know you're going to play a female character in the game, so...
Oh, that's a fair
point. Actually, yeah. As far as what you play, it's irrelevant to your chances of hooking up with somebody. They don't care. So that's kind of cool. Also, you can make your character whatever you want. You can, they do have the binary labels of male or female, but you can change the genitals if you want. So mix and match. Do whatever suits you.
Yeah, and Cyberpunk 2077, all that's the case too, but the thing about that, it's more realistic in the sense that certain characters won't hook up with you if you're a certain gender because they're not homosexual or bisexual, but a lot of games are more like, I guess, Baldur's Gate, where everybody is bisexual.
Yeah, the moral of the story is Baldur's Gate 3 is horny.
Yeah, I had thought so from all the articles I've seen about it. It seemed like it. So now I have definite confirmation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing. And it's also just the best D&D type video game I've ever played. So as far as sticking with Dungeons and Dragons rules for the most part and turn-based combat, it's pretty cool.
Right. Is it similar to Diablo, the way it looks, or is it?
It is third person like that. You can move your camera and you're moving your character around in a similar manner. But it's not the same when it comes to fights. Initiative is set, just like in Dungeons and Dragons. And then you take the first character in the initiative and they have their turn. And then the next person has their turn and you go like that.
I like turn based.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. And I just looked for graphics of screenshots, and it looks pretty impressive. Screenshots, that's for sure. The graphics look awesome. Yeah, and the relationships, can it be different races too? So a kobold can bang a human.
Oh, I hooked up with a Githyanki. Yeah.
Speaking of fetishes,
what did you call a Gith? What's a Githyanki?
Githyanki. It's a race.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Interdimensional race.
How about that? Interesting game. And how big can your party be?
You can only have four people in your party, unfortunately. So I would prefer to having up to six, but they capped it at four. But you can switch them out easily.
So when you say four, does that include you as well, or is it
you plus three others?
Oh, okay, interesting.
But you run into so far I've run into a mage, a thief, a fighter, a cleric. Wizard. and a druid. So, and a warlock. So, like, you pretty much have your pick. And at any given time, depending on what you want to do, if you want to have somebody else in the party, you can go back to camp,
very quickly and swap somebody out.
Now, is the character creation, is it like the latest Sims where you can make a character look pretty much like anything, or is it, you know, you have only like 30? I mean, you start by choosing
a race, and there are a limited number of races. Yeah. But then it does allow you to go through and choose different, you know, skin tones, eye color, hairstyle, tattoos, piercings, yada, 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 the whole deal.
Gotcha. Cool. Anything else, Eric? You want to bring up?
No, I've been spending most of my time doing that.
Yeah, I would think that would be a lot. All right, sounds good. Let's see, for me, I've done more Nier Automata, the video game, where you play as an android. I'm in the second part now where I'm playing as 9S, which is the boy android. So basically, it's basically the same as when you played as 2B, the woman android or girl android, but it's now through his perspective. And so, and you learn more about the history of the war. And the war is basically, it takes place in 10,000 AD. And what happened was aliens invaded the Earth. The people created androids, and the robots were created by the aliens. And then eventually all the aliens and humans died out within the past 10,000 years. And the androids and robots are still just fighting because they were programmed to fight each other, even though there is no more androids or humans. And the metaphysical and existential aspect of the game is that both the robots and androids are now slowly becoming more human and therefore more apt to not want a war anymore. Well, no, create societies. Well, they're going to suck anyway because they're basically created by humans and aliens anyway, and humans and aliens both suck. But they slowly turn into oddly more humanistic where they aren't wanting to fight anymore and just live. And it's kind of interesting. So I'm still playing that now. So hopefully I'll finish 9S this story, and then I play as A2, which is another woman android, and then the game ends, but it's a very long game. And then after that, I have been watching Mr. Bean and All in the Family, and my kiddos have been watching both of them with me, and they think those shows are hilarious. So it's kind of interesting that they stay – suggest it. They go, oh, can we watch Mr. Bean? Can we watch All in the Family? And it's like, yeah, sure. And so we've been doing that. Not horror related, but some nostalgia anyway. That's all I got. So let's go with you, Barrett. What do you got?
Let's see. So I've been so disappointed in Diablo 4 that I'm back to playing Grim Dawn, which is actually supposed to have a new expansion come out for it. This game came out in like 2014, and they're still doing stuff for it. They put out a big patch, like a free patch recently, which was pretty cool. They actually did some things that Diablo 4 is doing. They put in their game. And it's just a fun game. I'm still not max level in it. Max level is 100. And I'm working on the second difficulty level, which is like the elite level. And I want to try the ultimate difficulty level.
What's the name of this game again?
Grim Dawn.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that's kind of supposed to be like Diablo,
it's
right?
It's like Diablo. I've been playing a character that has he's a demolitionist and an inquisitor, and it makes him – you get two classes with every character, and when you choose your second one, you become another class. So I'm a purifier, and so I get, like, mortars and guns and all sorts of really cool stuff. But I'm having a blast with it. And even the second playthrough, I'm still having a ton of fun in it.
So is it more like a steampunk thing if they have guns and stuff?
It's, I guess you could say that, but it's not really that close to steampunk. They right. just have guns. I wouldn't say there's like machinery or anything. Everything else is swords and sorcery and stuff. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Guns with it. That's kind of cool. Anything else, Bert?
Yeah, so we watched the first episode of Shogun. I really enjoyed it. We'll see how good the whole season is.
Is that on Apple Plus or is that Netflix?
It's on Hulu.
That's it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was a very beautiful looking show and it was a very interesting show, but it is a lot of subtitles because it's taking place in Japan and a lot of the stuff that's happening was not focused on our English speaking character. Some of it was, but he'd still be talking to people that he couldn't understand, but we got to see what they were saying to him.
Is it a Japanese television show or is it American, but they just placed it in Japan?
I think it's American. I mean, it's based off the book, James Clavell's Shogun.
Oh, okay. There you go. I didn't know that.
So, have you read Shogun?
No, I haven't, but I'm familiar with his dad. He was popular by him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The original series came out in, like, the 70s, I think. I remember watching it. I enjoyed that one, but it's been so long since I read the book or saw that miniseries that I don't remember it at all. So.
Right. Let's see. Anything else, Bert?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we have started watching.
Oh, before you... No, yeah, go ahead. Okay. I was going to ask about Shogun. Is that dropped the entire thing, or is it coming out weekly episodes?
I think it's weekly, but there was a second episode. I just don't know if we are a week late or what.
Gotcha. So it's not like One Piece where they just dropped the whole thing.
No, I don't think they dropped the whole thing. Gotcha. It's not. It's Hulu, but it's actually FX, I think. So.
Oh, okay. So Hulu bought the rights to it or was working with FX to release it or something like that.
You know, I don't know who owns who anymore. So, it could be owned by Disney and, whatever. Well, yeah, I don't know.
So, do they actually release it on FX too, or is it directly straight to Hulu?
I would think it's on FX, but, the ads I've seen have just said on Hulu, So, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows nowadays, yeah. Well, and that's true. FX, right, that's Fox, right? So Fox is owned by Disney, and Disney owns Hulu, so who knows anymore? That's a fair point, yeah. That's a good point, yeah. And you said that was it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's go with you, Mike. What do you got?
Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
And I saw Dune 2, which I thought was really, really well done. I do have some issues with it, but I thought it was really well done.
Well, we'll be maybe talking about that in an upcoming episode, so we'll let that be for now. Yep. Let's go with you, Mike. Mike? Did we lose Mike? I think we lost Mike. All right, so since we lost Mike, we're going to go to... the top 10 podcasts in the past month. So the past 30 days. So here we go. So the Dark Discussions podcast, episode 610, Fallen, is number 10. That's the Denzel Washington Patreon pick. Number 9 was just released today. So it hasn't had as many downloads as you would expect since it's brand new. But I'm sure by next week it'll be much higher, but right now that's episode 615 of Dr. Christian's podcast, Piper, the Korean film. Again, a Patreon pick. Number 8 is the Cortana's Communique, the Halo podcast, episode 5, Illyria. And then number 7 is Cortana's Communique, the Halo podcast, episode 4, Reach. And then number 6 is Dark Discussions podcast, episode 614, Somewhere Quiet. And then number 5 is Cortana's Communiques, the Halo podcast, episode 3, Visegrad. Then episode 4 is Cortana's Communiques, the episode 1 and 2 combo episode, the season or the podcast opening for season 2 about Sanctuary and Sword. And then number 3 is the Dark Discussions podcast, episode 611, the space film ISS. And then number 2 is Dark Discussions podcast, episode 612, Mysterious Skin, 2004 film, and also a Patreon pick. And then the number 1 most downloaded episode of the podcast or the network is Dark Discussions, episode 613, Saltburn, 2023 film. So with number one and number two being sexual deviant type films, maybe there is something to do with it. Yeah, so maybe it makes sense.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. There you go. And
I've also detected a pattern, and it makes me sad, but it appears to be the truth, which is that whenever we cover something that's released theatrical, nobody listens to the episode until it comes out on VOD. Nobody goes
right
anymore.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And we've mentioned that a few times where, you know, we talk about a film like a year in advance because we saw it at the theaters, and then out of the blue, when it drops on VOD, Facebook is loaded with oh my God, did you see this great film? And it's like, oh, we saw that a year
ago. Yeah, last year.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right, Eric. I think Dune will be a difference maker, but I think you're right. All the rest, you're right. Yeah, it's kind of weird how that works. And unfortunately.
Dune is certainly the first movie of 2024 that I feel like need to go see in the theater.
Yeah.
And like you, Barrett, my friend Stu, he's the guy that I took a picture at the Patriots game, passed out, and I sent it to you, Eric. He actually said the same thing you used, Barrett, which is it's definitely a IMAX film to watch.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Already got my ticket.
For IMAX, too?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well done. That's good. So you have one right there in Ann Arbor?
It's not a real IMAX, but it's as close as I'm going to get.
Well, sure. I mean,
without going to the Henry Ford Museum in Detroit, which is
not showing again. I also think that type of IMAX is too much for some of these films. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't need to be enveloped in it. I want to be able to see it all.
No, but I'm going to a theater that has a larger screen and a full Atmos sound setup. So
yeah.
Right, right.
That's Atmos sound that's the most important, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, Mike mentioned that is very loud. Very loud.
Just an old man.
Yeah, it could be that.
He's not here to defend himself, so I'll take a swing. Right.
Yeah, he probably fell asleep or something.
My hearing's going, so it didn't sound too loud to me anymore.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. You had that ear problem a couple of days, weeks ago. All right, so that's pretty much some of our house cleaning there, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this film. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you get podcasts.
And Barrett, myself and you do another podcast, and we have a number of guest hosts that join us, and we talk about stuff. What's that one called?
That is called Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. And I just want to mention, Phil, we are 3 months from you having to come up with some movies. we're getting close to June.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, because we have a theme month in June. And then we still have to do the Peacemaker episode that we had on agenda for sure, and a couple other ones that we're going to do. So fair enough. And then myself, Eric, and co-host Mike do another podcast called Cinema A La Carte, which is a podcast that reviews films that aren't necessarily Dark Discussions films. Some of them could have been, such as Forbidden Planet and even some of the thrillers that we've done, like Collateral and whatnot. But generally, it's films that hadn't been picked for the podcast. And then myself, Mike, and Eric each take a week or an episode, I should say, to choose the film that we're going to do. So we've had an eclectic mix of films besides thrillers and science fiction films. We've had even a Pixar film, Disney film, Inside Out, that we did an episode on. We've done a Western in the Christian Bale film Hostels. We've done dramas such as Sean Baker's film Starlet, as well as we mentioned.
We got a sports movie on deck, don't we?
We do. Yeah, so we're going to have a sports film coming up in an episode when we record the next episode, which will probably be
June.
It'll probably be in March because Halo will be done by then. But yeah. So that's another podcast that we do. And then Barrett, what's that podcast? Speaking of television shows that we're doing right now with me, you, Mike, and Sean Fox of Alberta, Canada.
Cortana's Communiques. We do a weekly podcast on the Halo show. We're in season 2 right now. And I got to say, for all the downloads, we don't get a lot of emails. So if you listen to Cortana's Communiques, send us some emails and tell us what you think and where we're off or whatever.
Yeah, indeed. It's kind of weird. When we do podcasts that are about shows that interest a woman, we get hundreds of emails, it seems, because when we did Discovery of Witches, we got emails like 3 to 5 at least weekly. But
every other, the Nevers, we got emails too.
Oh yes, we did. You're absolutely right. Yeah, because that was another female theme show too, and we got a lot of emails there too. But yeah, for whatever reason, you guys out there, or even women listeners of Halo and Dark Discussions, just don't want to email us, which is kind of weird, but it's a different fan base, whether no matter your gender. It seems like if it's not a female-oriented show, less viewership decides to contact us. But yeah, listen to Barrett and send us emails. All right, so that's pretty much that. So let's get into our final thoughts on this movie here. So let's start with you, Eric. Midnight Peep Show.
Yeah, this movie exists, and this episode is finally over.
Right, fair enough. Barrett, what do you got?
This is going to be one of those movies I forget about. I don't think it's going to make my list at the end of the year, if I even remembered it to put on my list. So it was okay. I actually bought it just because it was only a few dollars more. It'll sit in my Amazon Prime list of owned movies, and I'll probably never watch it again.
All right, sounds good. It was somewhat disappointing. It's an anthology, so as all anthologies, there's the good and the bad. But this one didn't hit the cult feel. Or the horror or midnight movie aspect that you would have expected from such a subject. So generally disappointing. And they did cut corners with the special effects because of, like Mike mentioned, save time. So all in all, it was probably a forgettable film. It won't make my best of the year for sure. I don't see it falling at all there. It could make my best anthology of the year because I don't watch many anthologies. But
you have a point.
But otherwise, it'll be a forgotten film. I actually purchased it through Apple, because it was only a couple of bucks more, and I wasn't sure when I was going to watch it, and I didn't want it to expire. So, similar, I probably won't. Revisit it, even though it's sitting there on my queue. Maybe one of my girls, when they become teenagers in like 10 years from now, will say, hey, what's this film, and watch it. But otherwise, I don't see myself ever really going back to it, even though it'll be in my Apple owned films. All right, so that's my thoughts. I'll see if Mike's there again. Mike, you there? All right, so Mike is still gone. So
he's on the call theoretically, but yeah, he hasn't said anything in 30 minutes.
Yeah, so he must something happened. It could have been fell asleep or
has the cat finally killed him.
Yeah, it could be one of those.
Or he said, "Fuck this shit, this is stupid."
Yeah, or Pam called.
Nah, he would have hung up.
Yeah, it's something happened. He could have fell asleep or. One of those weird.
I would place my bet on fell asleep.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. He's had a bad week with his TV stuff. But
oh yeah.
So either way. All right. So that's pretty much it. So once again, the film is called Midnight Peep Show. The film is as of March 7th, 2024, is readily available for VOD or purchase wherever you do that. So as Barrett mentioned, he saw it and purchased it through Amazon Prime. I noted that I watched it through and purchased it through Apple. I'm sure, Eric, you probably did it through Apple as well.
Yeah, I rented it, though. Thank goodness. Yeah,
gotcha. And and Mike probably did it through Vudu or something like that because he usually goes through them. But either way,
Vudu doesn't exist anymore, by the way.
Oh, it's gone.
It has been rebranded Fandango at home or Fandango on the go, something.
Oh, okay. So they just sold out.
Walmart owns Vudu, right?
No.
They did.
The guys on the film cast actually covered this. Apparently, Walmart quietly sold Vudu during the pandemic.
Oh.
How about that?
So they were owned by Fandango already, and now they're officially changing the name.
Okay. Maybe they'll have better sharing amongst other stuff, because I do have some movies on Vudu that the only way I could get some of the, you know, you get those digital things in your DVDs, and it's the only way I could get them. Maybe we'll have more sharing available.
I wouldn't count on it. As far as I understand, the service remains the same. They're just changing the name.
Yeah, because Fandango, here, I'm reading it right now. Fandango Media is the American ticketing company that sells movie tickets via their website and their mobile app. It also owns Vudu, the streaming digital store and streaming service, as well as Rotten Tomatoes, which provides television and streaming media information. So, which is oddly owned, Fandango is also owned by NBC Universal and Warner Brothers Discovery. So, everybody owns everybody, which is kind of. Yeah, so Vudu was sold off by Walmart, as Eric mentioned, and they're just renaming it.
Bunch of incestuous siblings, that's for sure.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's all weird. It's weird that a review company is owned by a company that makes films, that sells films, that does film. It's just all weird. That's
well, and my biggest gripe is that Amazon acquired IMDb, and ever since then, IMDb has been much less useful than it used to be.
Absolutely.
Because they are really way more focused on pushing you ads than giving you information that you want.
Yeah.
The only thing I like about it, and this is spurious at best, is that I can actually easily look up who people are when I'm on an Amazon movie. And I can see what they're in. And it's the only service that I can really do that with very easily.
Well, and that's the Amazon streaming service, and that's a different creature. I'm just talking about the IMDb website. Which in the late 90s,
early 2000s
was a godsend, man. That was my favorite site on the internet, and now it's just garbage like everything else.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's way better when everything was independent, because then they were quote unquote a little more real. Even though I don't even know if that is a proper thing, but at least they weren't biased to a bigger company that owned them. So yeah. Anyway, the film is, like we said, readily available at all those places. So go check it out if it sounds interesting to you. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you do this out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Midnight Peep Show. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.